Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla-Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 48, and we are well and truly on the home stretch, mate. And I know, being a grade 6 teacher that you are, going back to 1-2, lot on for the grade 6 teachers at this time of the year.
We've mentioned it before, it's always a build-up, Adam, and in our penultimate episode for 2015, I want to just put up the question in our introduction. Is there a year level, particularly in primary school, that is more busy than others? I don't think there is. I think you could justify how busy you are if you laid all the jobs out on the table, but it does feel like year six is a huge build up to the end of the year.
There's different jobs, you're right, there's different jobs, and if you put them all on the table, you go, look, grade six, you're doing graduation, you're doing transition, you're doing, you know, leadership things, there's all those sorts of things going on. But I actually thought, coming back to 1-2, I'd kind of have it easy at the moment, but I kind of feel like I'm finishing different things off and organising things for next year, and there's other things going on that I don't feel like I'll be done until, you know, almost the second last day next week.
Yeah, hence my point. I think I think if we laid out all the jobs we had to all finish off with, I think it'd all end up pretty even, Adam. Maybe it's just that at year six it's kind of some large events that involve the kids and families and things like that, perhaps more so.
But absolutely. I have to ask you too, mate. I know you've been with your grade six group for a couple of years. How are you feeling going into graduation? You're kind of a bit sort of, you know, getting a little bit, I wouldn't say the word is sad, but a bit reflective about the students you've had and having to send them off to high school.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. The last 2 days particularly we've had a lot of the students have actually been out at their year seven orientation days, as a lot of, I think, students around the Geelong area have. And the ones that have been at school, though, who have had orientation days on other days, I've had some conversations with them about how they're feeling about it, and I've mentioned to them, it is. I'm starting to reflect on, you know, the journey that some of these students have come on in the last 2 years, because you do get to see a hell of a lot more of them and how they learn and how they've grown. So, it'll be an interesting day. I think I'll be a bit sad next week.
It comes around quick too, doesn't it? In the sense that going back to 5-6, I taught students for 3 years in a row, coming from a smaller school, 3 years in a row. And, you know, I think back to when I started in grade four,
it's
and
massive,
watching them go and leave at grade six, I went, gee, that went quicker than I expected. And all of a sudden they're gone and you're not really part of their lives anymore. And yet, and when you've been such a big part, like you have been for the last 2 years, it is a little bit hard to let them go.
It is. And just finally, our year sixes this year will all be doing really short speeches when they get presented with their graduation pack on graduation night. So when they get called up, only about 15 seconds or 20 seconds, but I was working with some of them today and it's lovely what some of them are saying, but they're becoming reflective. A couple of them said, it's made me think about my first couple of days in prep and how far I've come and how long ago that was and how I felt and how I feel now. Great. Yeah, it's great. I love reflective time like this.
Great. So, mate, we've got some great topics tonight. So, without further ado, let's get going.
Let's go. Adam, great timing by The Age this week in the newspaper, coming to the end of the year, and all of us as teachers are trying to tick off, as well as finishing up the in-classroom jobs. We're starting to make our to-do list about the other things outside the classroom that we have to finish off for the year, packing up, all those sorts of things. And there was an article in The Age during the week, headline, "They Don't Need No Education in the Final Weeks of School."
Well, clearly that's the person who wrote that title needs to. They don't need no education.
Well, I hope they ask Pink Floyd for some copyright there, Adam. Interesting. Look, I must admit, I'm a bit of a advocate, and just in conversations I have been, for Parents Victoria. Anytime I've read about what they have to say about matters in education, I kind of agree. I think they're on our side.
Yeah, they are.
But they've kind of let me down in this article, Adam. And
you weren't happy, were you?
Well, I just want you to picture, I'm on the first hole. It's a par five. Got my thick driver in my hand. And I'm about to tee off on Parents Victoria, Adam.
And give it a good whack too. You're going to knock the stuffing out of that golf ball.
Parents Victoria are completely unhappy and have criticised the less academic end of year programs that are common in many schools, saying they are often a waste of time. Now, before the naysayers jump in and say, well, I know of my child that watches movies at the end of the year. Granted, I know that there are sometimes the odd busy lesson that you put in.
Sure.
Maybe watching a film, maybe doing a Christmas activity. And as teachers, we know that sometimes we do those so we can get some other things done. But there's no, in this article, there's no backup or research from Parents Victoria. I've read it twice, Adam, to see whether they've got any kind of research that shows that this is actually a negative thing that's happening in schools, because I'd like them to walk in and just see the amount of jobs that we have to try and knock off in our work time between now and the end of the year, and how we could possibly do it if we were teaching an absolutely to the letter proper program right up until the last day of term.
Couldn't be done, mate. Couldn't be done. And you're right in saying there's no research. Parents Victoria also, as parents, you'd think they would teach their kids that if you've got a problem, come up with a solution. And they haven't done that. They haven't done that at all. They've kind of just had a bit of a go and said the end of the year is less academic. And you and I would agree. Of course, the end of the year is less academic and these reports have been written, reports are done. Now, as far as I'm concerned, at the end of the year when reports are done, that's kind of it. I mean, there's no point going, well, we're going to introduce a bit of time now and that sort of stuff. It's just pointless and that sort of stuff. So they haven't actually come up with a solution. Okay, fair enough. If they don't like that it's less academic, no worries. Okay, what's your solution? Where's your research? Where's the support behind what you're talking about? There isn't any, is there?
Well, no. The only thing that's close to it is that the Executive Officer of Parents Victoria, Gail McCarty, has said that the new government's been talking a lot about kids missing school and truancy. Mm. And we've mentioned it in previous podcasts. That's granted. But and she's saying that this kind of less academic end of the year goes against what the government is saying about kids missing school. But I don't think that's good enough for this time of the year. Look, no. You mentioned reports. Teachers don't stop teaching after they've written their report and finished their assessments.
Of course
but
not.
Sometimes it's an opportunity to actually try some more investigative type activities. Mm. Now, I know one prep teacher who works in the local area who the other day had needed a task for the kids to do because she had a lot of things to do.
Mm.
Gave them a heap of materials, plastic bottles, what have you, stuff that they'd accumulated, and they had to just create something. I think there was some kind of topic behind it, but had to create something, and she said that they just went for it. Now, what a great idea.
Mm.
Now, that's not just busy end of year work that's less academic.
Not at all.
That's we're working with our hands.
It's fantastic.
There, problem solving.
Yep.
So there's at least one example.
Yeah,
that goes against what they say.
That's exactly right. And I know from my 1-2s, you know, we've got some activities coming up that are Christmas based, but are a lot of investigation things as well. There's a lot of working at clues and symmetry and all these different things that can link back to what we've been doing. But they are Christmas activities that they can do because, as we've spoken about as well, I mean, I know you are moving classrooms. I know there's a lot of people in my school who are moving classrooms. We've been getting a new building. When are we supposed to find the time to do that? I mean, if I'm standing up there trying to teach maths, I can't then go, well, I'm just going to take a box over while you do a bit of multiplication. Goes, you'll be right for 10 minutes.
Exactly.
You can't do that stuff. And we don't come up on the holidays to do that. So we might come in later on to maybe set up your classroom a bit and get back into the groove. But, you know, we've got to have the opportunity to do that.
And when you pack up the classroom with your students, particularly in primary school, at the end of the year, to me it feels like a communal thing.
Mm.
It's your classroom that you own with the kids. Yep. So it's everyone's classroom. Mm. So it's kind of like you're packing it up and you're taking everything down as a whole, finishing it together.
Mm.
Now, Adam, the other thing that I thought of is the communal things that we do. Now, in the article it mentions that perhaps excursions are a negative as well, that going to science works or going to the Melbourne Zoo. Now, we, as talked about in last week's podcast, I've done surfing recently with the kids.
Yep.
We've got a house day next week where all the houses are getting together to go out into the community to some fun kind of events. To me, Adam, that's a bonding experience late in the year. Now, particularly for the year sixes, that's so important because the year sixes have had enough and they can go off in some. So those kind of events, to me, help with that last minute bonding that makes the end of the year more smooth.
Absolutely, because as I've always said, the grade sixes can smell high school. I reckon they get mid year and they can just smell that high school and they know all the good things that are going on there. And they don't necessarily tune out, but they're not as committed. There's a bit of that, you know, they can be a bit more naughty in the yard and they can be a little bit chatty and do those sort of little things like that where clearly they're not as focused as they were, say, you know, in April compared to November. And there's those opportunities. I mean, we go to Adventure Park at our school. We take the kids off to Adventure Park on the second last day and they just enjoy that time with their friends. That some of them are going to different high schools and may not see each other. They go and have a whale of a time. That's what's really important.
Yeah. And to finish off, like, I don't know how many more examples you and I have to show about how you can do creative tasks right up until the end of the year, but I just think that Parents Victoria, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more hard evidence of what you've seen. If they know of schools that are consistently watching Christmas movies or other types of movies quite even a few weeks out from the end of the year, then sure, give us some examples and maybe that those schools can be spoken to. But look, I just think there's too many examples. Look, today my colleague got our students to try and create some, because we're doing some shape at the moment, create some baubles for their prep buddy's Christmas tree that involve a 3D shape. But they weren't allowed to do a cube and they weren't allowed to do just like a simple sort of triangular shape. We had some trying dodecahedrons it was brilliant. So again, another creative task that uses this end of the year time wisely.
And I will say one thing at the end. private schools and Catholic schools and things at the moment, a lot of those schools are finished.
Yes.
So why don't we say finish in week 9? At the end of week 9. So we're teaching all the way up there. The reports go out. We just teach all the way through and we finish at the end of week 9, early December. Then the kids, and then parents can go and do a holiday before Christmas. They can do those things. And there's not that 2 weeks at the end. Why can't that happen?
I think there's a lot to be said. I mean, I'm quite happy as personally to work like right up until the time we work. Mm. But I think there is an argument for why the students are doing an 11th week in term 4. I think there's a huge argument for that.
Yeah. So, look, if you've got any thoughts on that and what your school does and suggestions for wonderful end of year activities that don't include excursions, then we'd love to hear from you. So, Rico, today's second topic is a little bit about what we've spoken about in the last couple of weeks. It's an article by Lorna Hall from the Washington Post about, I gave my students iPads and I wish I could take them back. And as you and I have discussed, there's been a lot of negative press recently about digital technologies and how their impact in the classroom hasn't been great. They've actually said that the research and the results has shown that there hasn't been an improvement with using them in the classroom. Now, you and I are a very big advocate for them, if they're used in the right way. Now, this lady goes on to say that, I place an iPad in my kids' hands and watch them, them go into the screen and click from left to right and do those things, but they didn't actually then interact with the other students around them. And while I can see that, she goes on to talk about that they designed lessons and they planned things to go with them that they thought, yeah, that was okay, but they were seeing that more students were just putting their heads in the iPads and being able to click from left to right. Now, again, you and I have got arguments for both sides, but more on the fact that clearly these people weren't prepared to use iPads if that's all they were seeing that they were getting out of it. Would that be correct, Rick?
Maybe, yeah. I'm not sure. I've read it once and I want to read it again because I still, and we talked about this off air, I'm still yet to really see, well, I guess I want to see some more detail in what happened in her classroom. She does say that the school district bought iPads for all the kids. So this is in the States, in North Virginia. So it must be something that was rolled out across many districts around the some states in America.
Yep.
But I just wondered, like, because she mentions that in a wet weather timetable, that they, once they had their devices, they'd come in and they just buried their heads in their screen. Mm. And she said that in the past, wet weather timetables would be used in a much more, in her words, creative way. Mm. They'd be building with Lego and doing lots of more hands-on things. And she has said that that's completely gone. So my question is, going back to you is, has she developed, or did they develop, a well-balanced classroom where the kids were still, like, interaction was important, making stuff was important, and then you've got your digital device as part of that.
Why, though, when they came in for that wet day timetable, why did they all just grab the iPads? Why didn't she actually say, sorry, guys, I'd say, I think the iPads will stay away, so you can use the Lego, you can do this stuff, and put that out there, and not yet let them use it, to actually just go, they just come inside and bury their heads in the iPads. Well, aren't you the teacher? Aren't you the one at the front going, well, hang on a second, I actually don't like what's going on there. So next time that happens, let's put them aside and do something else. But the tone I want to take from this one too, Rick, and you brought it up really well, I want to segue into it with the school district bought them and sort of rolled them out. If the school district is going to do that, isn't it their responsibility to then take the time and put the resources in to teaching teachers and staff how to use them appropriately and effectively in the classroom? Mm. It's great to buy them, but you can't just go, here they are, guys, have at it. A lot of people will go, well, what do you want me to do with it? How am I going to do things? Yeah. Isn't it their responsibility to actually go, well, we're going to put this amount of money and this amount of time in teaching you not only how to use them, but how to develop curriculum to use them effectively?
Well, there was a lot of, thousands of dollars were spent on it, she says. So I wonder whether any of that was for professional development. It's a great question. So my only answer to that is from the article that she says that her and her team's planning did help. So the way that they just decided to structure their lessons once they had the devices. But it's interesting, she lists a heap of things that they didn't anticipate. Alarms going off randomly throughout the day on the device. Wi-Fi issues, username issues, password issues. Now, we have... and she said that all this sucked their instructional time. Now, I've got staff in my school who find some of those things still horribly frustrating.
Yeah.
So I think this is where professional development could come in. But I don't think money needs to be spent on that. Mm. You've got every school today would have at least at least two people who would have the skills to be able to show a staff member who is not that confident how to get past password issues, how to help the kid give how to give the kids passwords that they won't forget, or how to store them somewhere where they're easily accessible. I think that kind of stuff should be able to come from your own staff, I reckon.
And not only your own staff, why couldn't it come from your own students? Why couldn't it come up that goes off and you've got little Johnny over there going, no, I've got that covered, yeah, just bring it over here and they can do it. And you don't have to lose that instructional time, particularly if, say, you've got a small group on the floor and you're working through something, ding, 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 and one of the kids can just get up and go and do it. You don't even have to look. You just go, yep, thanks, Johnny. So, guys, and off you go. You keep going, you have to go, just wait here, guys. And you got to go and fix it. It's frustrating. Put it back on your shins. What a great opportunity for some of those kids who may not be, you know, strong academically, though, to have a leadership role in the classroom.
Well, she and she does outline some things that her students have done. Like, she says that they would create movies and recordings of themselves explaining maths problems. She recorded mini lessons for them to watch at home so that she could, you know, in inverted commas, flip the classroom. But her big question is, did the benefits offset what was lost? And I just think they're the key words for me.
Yeah.
What was lost? If all that social interaction stuff was lost, wouldn't you then, as a teacher, though, go back and say, right, how can I balance my classroom out so we've got face-to-face interaction time with the device? I haven't had this issue. Like, we've got one-to-one this term, this year, and more, and next year it'll be going even more so, particularly with tablet devices. That's not my worry. I'm not worried about it because I know that I'm going to work hard to foster a well-balanced classroom. Yep.
And as a teacher, shouldn't she be reflective of that? So this is what I'm losing. How can I stop that from happening? What can I change in my planning? What can I do with these students to stop that from happening? Because just because that's happening doesn't mean you should take them out of the classroom. And like I said, people are starting to become quite negative about the use of digital technologies in the curriculum. And what I think it highlights for us is that not only do staff need to be trained on it, but we need to have the department and everyone involved to make sure that everyone is trained up and understands how they can use them effectively in the classroom.
It's just about sharing and not going down that negative track straight away. Yeah. So again, we've kind of had a bit of a theme on this topic for the last three episodes. And again, if you're a one-to-one, particularly with tablets, tablet devices, we'd love to hear your opinions. Well, Adam, we see lots of news articles these days about violence in our community, and it does seem like, according to the media, that random violence, and I'm not talking necessarily terrorist violence, but random violence seems to be more prevalent in the community today. And harking back to a topic we talked about recently, that kids have more access to these kind of news stories, don't they? And something that hit the Herald Sun and another Melbourne newspaper this week was the amount of reports of violent behaviour by students and parents towards teachers and principals was very high in Victoria at the moment. And I just want to start off by saying that, and I think, I can't remember if we mentioned this or not in a previous episode, but I think it was late last week or early this week, there was the release of the 2015 Principal Health and Wellbeing Survey of 4,386 Australian principals, deputies and assistants. Australian Catholic Union, the Teachers Health Fund, commissioned it, and it says that principals are 8 times more likely to be the subject of actual violence than the general adult population, and 5 more times likely to be threatened with violence.
Unbelievable.
It is a concern, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, I understand that parents want the best for their kids. You and I understand that very well, and parents can get emotional and get upset, particularly when their child they feel their child's being bullied or things are going wrong. It's very easy for them to come storming up to the school, wanting answers, wanting retribution, wanting all these things, and it's a principal's role to bring them down and actually say, well, we need to go through this process. I can't just go and knock this kid over and get them into trouble because I need all the facts, because more often than not, kids can bend the truth a little bit. But when a principal has to say that and try and talk about it from almost a neutral position, parents don't like that and they lash out. Now, I'm not defending the parents here at all, but this is where it comes from. And their principals need that protection. I mean, that shouldn't be happening. It shouldn't be. I don't know how anyone in their right mind can feel like they go, well, my kid's being hard done by, so I'm going to clip the principal. That's just wrong to me.
It is wrong, but we know it happens. We know that, and this next comment is not really backed up by research, but I've always felt, and I always wonder, whether sometimes a lot of this escalation of tension and violence directed at staff members from the general public and families comes from sometimes parents particularly who maybe have had their own negative experiences at school when they were young. So their initial perception of school is always going to be negative. So the slightest angst that they maybe see their child receive is like, bang, I'm going to go hard at the school.
That's right.
But look, this some of the stories in this article, and we'll put it on the blog, are quite horrible. There's lots of quoted stories from that have been reported about violence in schools.
And just in there as well, some of that violence has been reported. I mean, it's easy to think automatically that that's, you know, we're thinking high school and things, but some of these are from grade one students, you know, prep students who have picked up chairs or, you know, just gone and tried to whack and bite and things. That's, you kind of, you know, you and I haven't experienced that, but that's just unbelievable. Like, to think that kids at that young have that sort of rage in them, that something doesn't go their way, that they want to lash out at somebody, particularly the teacher.
That's verbal abuse too, isn't it?
Yes.
The Victorian Principals Association President, Gabrielle Lee, has called for tougher penalties, saying that there should be an automatic jail term when parents physically abuse staff in school. I kind of agree with that. I don't see why, because it's in a school, it should be anything less.
Yep. Do you think you could make an analogy there about how keen we are in society to with umpires? You know how umpires, there's lots of things in the news about, you know, parents, you know, lashing out at umpires and getting, you know, life bans from football, or, you know, banned from coming to the school and doing that, and banned from going to the footy field because there's a decision that hasn't gone their way. They've walked out to the umpire. And we've heard of it. You've read the articles too about, you know, umpires being punched. Is that something that could cross over into schools? Well, if you're going to, you know, physically abuse or verbally abuse a principal or a teacher or something, then you're not allowed back on the school grounds. So there needs to be that respect and understanding of what the teacher's and the principal's role is within a school.
Well, you'd like to think that that has happened, that if there's been violent episodes, that at the very least, police are involved and that person is kind of like an intervention order, is not allowed near the grounds. Apparently, there's a similar... in WA at the moment, police and nurses... there is that level of protection where there'd be like an automatic jail term. So I think what Gabrielle Lee was saying is that should be baseline for schools. And I kind of agree, because anyone can still, like, particularly in our Australian society, education in schools, anyone can walk off the street into the office and demand they see someone. There's not real security or anything like that, is there?
No. Look, I think what it brings up to, mate, and before we finish this off, is that you and I would want to encourage parents that even if you're upset, even if you feel like something's not going your child's way, they're being bullied or things, just come up and see us. Calm yourself down and come up and say, look, I've just got a couple of concerns. Can we just sit down and talk about them? And this is what they are. And don't come out and go, well, I want this done now. I want this done. And I want this kid crucified. And I want this going on. Ask and sit down, look, this is what's been happening. This is what's coming home. Can you fill in any blanks? Can you tell me what you think or what you're seeing? And actually have that discussion, because more often than not, I mean, I've had parents in the past come up demanding for this and that. And then when I've actually told them the full story, the look on their face is, I'm really sorry, I didn't realise that was going on. Well, don't come up fired up. Just come up and talk to me and fill in the blanks, and we can learn and work these things out together.
We've been lucky. You and I have worked in schools and work in schools where the parent body is quite positive. We don't have to deal with anything too serious. But
absolutely.
I guess this is talking about probably schools in tough areas, you know, and we do... give a shout out to those people who work in those areas, because someone has to do it, and good on them.
Absolutely. So if you've got any feedback about that, if you've actually had it happen to you, we hope it hasn't happened to you, but within your school or within even in your school cluster, we'd love to hear the story about what happened and the outcome after that. Well, mate, tonight is the penultimate anecdote for 2015, and the new ball is going to you.
Well, it's funny, Adam, I did yard duty today at... I had an extra yard duty at lunchtime today, and that was the moment when I came up with today's anecdote,
right?
Because I was struggling.
And perfect time.
At this time of the year, kids are getting tired, getting a bit irritable, so are staff. We've talked about the silly season. So I wanted to talk about dobbing today, Adam, because the dobbing, in inverted commas, just goes up a notch at this time of the year, in all sorts of facets. It's either the dobber and the way that they dob, the dobby, and then all those little people around the periphery who just want to get in their own little comment as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just hanging around like a half circle watching and that sort of stuff.
And look, let's talk about the preps for a second. To their credit, massive year for them. First year, they're tired. Classic today, a prep came up to me and wanted to dob on someone. They got about four words into their explanation and just forgot what they were talking about. And I think some of us have had that before.
Absolutely.
Also, the ones who come, and this has happened many times, you know, the ones that it's normally preps to who come up, and they tell you, they go, Jaden has called Brody an idiot. And they tell you, matter-of-factly, just like they expect that you know exactly who Jaden and Brody are, even if you teach year six.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And then you'll say, can you point them out to me? They ran away. Yeah. The school of 600? Yeah, good luck finding them.
They're over there somewhere. And then you come out, well, why isn't Brayden, if Brayden's so upset, why hasn't he come to talk to me about it? And why are you dobbing him?
And I'll be truthful, if it's not a serious one, I have, if they've pointed towards another area where there's another teacher on yard duty, I've kind of handballed it and said, like, let's imagine it was you. See Mr. Lavar's down there? Yeah, he's in charge of that area. Go down and tell him.
I love the one of the preps and the young ones where they'll come over to you and go, yes, and what can I do? Such and such said that they didn't care. Well, that's okay. Well, what we talk? Well, they were playing somewhere else, and I asked them if they wanted that, and they said they didn't care. Okay, what do you want me to do about it? I don't know. You know, they kind of don't know what to do about it, but you kind of, well, it's okay. Well, don't play there. Or they come up and go, such and such ran off, and I go, well, what happened there? And they said they didn't want to play on the side anymore, and they ran off somewhere else. Well, I can't tell them to play. Come back over and play.
I can't recall what episode it was of Fawlty Towers, but I can remember Basil Fawlty saying, "Oh, I could have this." It might be with Manuel. He's like, "Oh, I could have this conversation for the rest of my life," you know. And it's kind of like that when you're talking to prep sometimes. Yeah, yeah. The one that I want to talk about, this happened today, and I won't name names. And but for the Dobby, I'll just use a different girl's name. But a boy came up to me today and said that one of my girls had flicked him in the eye with her hat.
Oh, right.
Turned out to be true, and it was a girl that was very very much surprised me. But I still to this even at this time of night, I haven't quite worked out whether this student, male student, was trying to have a lend. But he walked up to me during my yard duty stint, and because this happened during lunch eating time, and said, and I quote, and I'm going to change the name to Sarah, so it wasn't Sarah, and came up and said, and what was the justice that was meted out to Sarah? I just looked at him and said, you wanted some sort of justice?
I
said, was that the main reason behind it? Wow, he's an intelligent boy, this boy. Yep. But I said, is that, I did, you know, I followed it up for you. It was a really interesting, tricky kind of conversation, but I think he's got a quirky personality, this guy. I think he was just having a bit of fun, what justice has been measured? And then I said that I'd spoken to them, and I don't think they realised how hard that hit you, and we know not to hit with hats. He walked off, and then he turned and smiled after him, but he walked off and said, the justice system doesn't work like that. And I thought,
so is he expecting you to say, well, actually Sarah's going to be facing charges and she'll be up at the Geelong courts next Thursday? And he goes, well, thank you very much.
I think that should have been my answer. So
can I add one more to this, because I love this anecdote, because there's always good ones. Do you always have as well, particularly towards the end of the year, the perennially injured students who are continually coming up limping and injured and stuff, and they fell off the thing and they've hurt their ankle and they're doing the big limp and their arm's sore, or they've flicked their finger, or they're always in the sick bay looking for that magic ice pack, the fixer all, the ice pack. They've got the ice pack on there. Yeah, I'm feeling all right. And they'll take it back to class while they're leaning over, holding it on their ankle, and melting all over their ankle.
Then don't you see the eyes darting around, just looking to see who's looking? And as soon as they catch a peer who's looking at them, that limp just gets a little bit more pronounced.
Yeah, here you go. Oh yeah, it could be broken. You know, that sort of stuff. So great anecdote, mate. Great anecdote.
So again, everyone's got those stories. Give us a dobbing story. We're all tired. It's the end of the year. Share it, please.
So, mate, that brings an end to the penultimate episode for this week. And next week is shaping up to be an absolute barnstormer.
Well, it's going to be an epic, Adam. And we always promised after last year's Christmas episode that we'd try and top it. So we intend to have a slightly more extended episode next week. We've got special guests who will be here in the studio, Adam. More than one, which is exciting.
Very exciting.
And one who we worked hard on and we finally got, who we won't reveal.
Yep.
And also, we're going to be Skyping with someone from Melbourne, from the Melbourne area. So it's great. We're going to have a real mix of things, Adam.
Yeah, and, it is. It's good.
Mix of topics. And look, we really hope that, particularly to our regular listeners, that you can join us. I know everyone will be very busy at the end of next week, but we hope that this week's episode and our final episode next week will give you just that little bit of solace to finish off your school year.
Absolutely. And I can honestly say I'm looking forward to having the hairy man on next week. So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.